Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 and half year ending 30th September 2021 financial results conference call of Agrotech Foods Limited, hosted by Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Mehul Desai from Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Rutuja. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of Anand Rathi Institutional Equities, I would like to welcome you all for Q2 FY 2022 conference call of Agrotech Foods. From the management side, we have Mr. Sachin Gopal, Managing Director, and Mr. K.P.M. Srinivas, the CFO of the company. I'll hand over the call to Mr. Sachin Gopal for his opening remarks, and then we can open the call for Q&A session. Over to you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Mehul, and good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for taking out the time to be with us today. We'll walk you through the quarter two results with also an emphasis on, you know, how the half year is closed, because that's always a good idea. It's a larger timeframe and to provide a perspective therefore on what we think will happen in the balance part of the year. We've already uploaded the presentation on the net on our website. I'm right now on page one. Moving to the next second page, what is our company's strategic vision? Becoming the best performing and the most respected foods company in India. We definitely think we're on track to become that, and we'll explain to you a little later why we think so. Okay. What are the key performance highlights? Moving on to the next page for quarter two and therefore for the half year. We saw a continued strong foods growth of about 14%, right? That's less than the first quarter, but as we mentioned earlier and when we did the quarter one call with you, we told you that the growth in ready-to-cook was higher than what we had expected in quarter one, largely due to the fact that there was a second COVID, second wave of COVID, and therefore there was greater in-home consumption, which definitely benefited ready-to-cook. It benefited the RTC business last year also. It is there in our base as well, but again, it was there as far as the quarter one is concerned. With increasing normalcy, more and more people going back to work, barring those pretty much who are only in white-collar jobs or working in offices which are not with, you know, air-conditioned and not with poor ventilation. Life has returned a lot more to normal as of now, albeit cautiously. We ended up with a year-to-date growth of about 21%, right? Going forward, we certainly need to be cautious in terms of how we manage the ready-to-cook business, right? Because there are going to be more people outside, albeit in a phased manner. Fortunately for us, we've kept our advertising investments absolutely intact for last year and for the first six months of this year as well. In fact, last year we increased significantly. We know that whatever are the changes now will really be due to any changes in in-home consumption rather than any actions that we as a consequence of action that we have taken ourselves. Overall, I think we are in a good space. The reduced COVID-19 threat perception helps all food categories other than ready-to-cook, right? Ready-to-eat, as you would have seen from the data, has actually, you know, bounced back nicely. Chocolates and breakfast cereals also doing well. I'll talk more about them separately. In peanut butter, if you recall, even though our business had grown by about 15%, which is a good rate of growth, strong rate of growth last quarter, we had flagged off that we possibly lost some share and because, you know, we can now see the monthly numbers in addition to the quarter. We have taken actions. We had flagged off, if you recall, that, you know, we need to enter certain price points between 100 and 200 and have a better presence there, because there are a lot more brands of peanut butter available as compared to what they were earlier. We've taken those actions, and we can see that they are, you know, if you look at the monthly trends, it's looking like the actions are giving us the results that we want. Nevertheless, whatever would have been the share loss, that would have had an impact, and therefore the growth rate is a very moderate 7% growth rate. We'll talk more about each category later. Premium oil volumes are up about 4%. This is in line with expectations. You asked me earlier, where do you think we could get to? I said about mid-single digit, right? Obviously there's lots of ups and downs in the data. There was a very inflated consumption last year in our base of quarter one. You know, that explained also the quarter one figures, but kind of coming back in line. The critical thing, of course, is that we want the volume to have an assurance of margin, right? At the end of the day, you know, we when we started our journey in FY 2008, we had a gross margin on oils of 71 crores, right? And last year, we closed at about 72 crores. But in the middle, we took it up. If you look at our annual director's report, annual report for this year also, you'll see the graph. It's 71, it went up to about 150 crores, right? And that is the time we were using that money wisely, we hope, to invest both in CapEx. You know, we spent about 400 crores on CapEx and about 200 crores on media, right? And that has obviously created a foods business which is of a completely different profile altogether. So right now we are back in that 70 odd crore range, and I think if we are getting that kind of margin and, you know, we feel comfortable that it's not a leaking bucket as far as we are concerned, then that allows us to focus on the foods business, which is obviously the strategic part of the business. So overall, that part is also looking good. Our year-to-date foods GM is lower by 3 crores. I'm going to spend some little time on this chart. So for those of you who are not on page 3, please, if you can just go to, page 4, please do go there. Right? Because there's obviously been a lot of noise around in the last week or so around input commodity costs, so on and so forth. So I want to walk you through what is the status as far as the first 6 months are concerned. So when you look at our weighted average cost of raw material and packaging material, right, and it varies, by the way, across the five food categories that we compete in, right, we are getting an average input cost inflation of about 15%. So that means if the total value of raw material and packaging material that we were buying was about 100 crores, we've got a 15 crore negative impact in the first 6 months due to higher commodity prices. Okay, and that is weighted. So it's weighted for each category, so on and so forth. Now, within this, there is a broad range. Our largest food business, which is also our oldest food business, which is instant popcorn business, which is, of course, not that old. That is also only about 15 years old. Actually, had an increase of 20%, right? And then there were categories like breakfast cereals, which hardly saw any increase at all. So this is an important point, which is that we have consistently argued and said that we would like to have a diversified food portfolio, because if you have a diversified food portfolio, chances are you will always be able to manage commodity headwinds fairly easily, right? Because all commodities don't necessarily go up at the same time. So right now, for example, edible oil is we've seen a large increase in edible oil costs. And that is impacting industry after industry. But equally, sugar has not seen the same increase. Equally, milk powder has not seen the same increase. Cocoa has seen some increase because of some change in duties, right? So the more diversified our portfolio is, the lower the effective commodity inflation we are going to have at any point in time. That is the underlying philosophy of where we've been coming for, and therefore the need for having a competing in a large number of categories. So our assessment is obviously right now we are very heavily weighted towards salty snacks, but if our business has been the kind of business today that we are building it to be, probably our input cost inflation would not have exceeded 10%. Obviously we don't have the exact number, but that 15% would have translated probably into 8-9%. And that's a great space to be in, right? That's a great space to be in, because if you have a portfolio which is so well naturally hedged, you automatically have the room to continue to grow gross margin. Right? Because as you can see, even in these 6 months, we've taken cautious pricing, okay? In the low cashing points, the 5 and the 10, we've been more cautious about it. In the upper ones, we've been more aggressive in terms of pricing, right? And in some cases, actually, we've also dropped prices, like in peanut butter, where we wanted to be more competitive. But overall, we've taken prices of about 4.5 crores. So we've taken pricing. And that is consistent with the fact that we have a large portfolio which competes at different price points. It's not that we are a salty snack business which has 95% of its turnover coming from 5 rupee price point, where you have very limited options, right? So, we have products at multiple price points. And the other is, naturally, because of the volume growth that we have of 20%, we got an incremental volume growth margin through volume of about 7.5%. Right? So in total, for the first 6 months, we made up about 12 crores. Input cost inflation was about 15. That leaves us with a gap of 3 crores. But again, I repeat, as we build up to the kind of business that we are building it to be, it should be the kind of business that even if you have broad commodity inflation, in the country, it should be moderated for us for our portfolio, and then pricing and volume should more than compensate for it and keep growing the food gross margin, which obviously puts us in a happy space in terms of the total P&L, that we can continue to deliver profit growth. And as we talk, we'll talk more about it. We'll talk to you what we are doing in terms of the portfolio and how, therefore, this is starting to look so good. In terms of commodity prices, where are we today? Because there's been a lot of sort of noise in the media about it. Our math is that this is the commodity cost that we have now experienced in the first two quarters. We are up about 10% versus the second half of FY21. Okay, right? Meaning, because the inflation started in second half, it actually really the graph started going vertically upwards much more sharply actually in quarter four. But definitely the average for the second half, if we compare current commodity prices of where we are right now, is up about 10% versus the second half of FY21. So we expect therefore a narrowing of the inflationary impact. Plus of course, we expect to see the positive in, impact of increase in pricing and of course volume growth. Okay. So in fact, that should be mentioned there. So overall, I think our take is not that, you know, we expect to see the inflationary situation worsen. Looking at the data of how it's panned out over the first 6 months, we actually see that input inflation should come down versus the 15 crores. And if you take a simple figure of 10, probably should be 10%, it should be 10 crores. Let's see, obviously, none of us are in a position to predict exact commodity prices, but let's see how it progresses, and we'll know by the end of the year of where we've ended. And we should definitely get more pricing because we've taken price increases. We've taken more price increases even in quarter two. Many of it would not have fully come into our books because it takes a little while to phase it in. So we expect pricing to go up, and I'm sure that we will continue to grow volume and therefore get that positive benefits from that. All right. So I hope that I've given some perspective in terms of the input cost inflation. And I think as we work towards being a more and more diversified food company, we can expect to see that we really have a very powerful moat and a strong portfolio which can enable us to handle future events of the kind that are happening right now. This is not going to be the last year in which there will be spikes in commodity prices. Maybe they'll come down, maybe they can go up again, but probably not in the near future because there are very high prices, but we will see these at times. Okay. Year to date, SG&A is largely flat to a prior year because of we have had higher CSR provisioning. We also have higher royalty payments to our parent company, and also travel has opened up, so you know travel expenses are a little higher. Our comp and benefit is up a little bit, probably by about 50 lakhs, right? And we did give some salary increases this year, and but offsetting that is a one-time credit into the P&L of approximately 2 crores. Okay, so when you look at the P&L at a high level, at gross margin terms, we are down 12 crores. That is, the oil GM is down 9 crores and the food GM is down 3 crores. That's a total of 12 crores, right? And then there is a approximately 1 crore benefit, which reflects the net impact of this one-time credit. And I just come to the one-time credit, less whatever is the increase in the SG&A and other parts of the P&L to deliver a 11 crore lower figure in profit before tax. Now, I missed commenting on the oil GM, so I'm going to talk a little bit about that. You can see out of the, therefore, the 12 crores, the food business is very tracking very closely to last year's gross margin. About 9 crores is coming from edible oils, and that is largely because in the first half of last year, we had a very elevated consumption, particularly in the first quarter of last year. And also, we took the price correction in the second half of last year. We started to correct our prices. As you know, we would have been about 25 to 30% more expensive than competition. When we were 200 rupees and competition was 150 rupees, right? We, over the period, once the first half of the year was over, and we kind of knew where we had a reasonable expectation of where we were going to close the year, we took that price correction that we so needed on edible oils, which had not been possible earlier because we certainly needed the money to be able to build the food business. And therefore, if you actually look at the first half, gross margin of 35 crores, it's trending pretty well to the prior year of 72 crores, or even the FIO rate, the figure of 71 crores. So I think we are kind of in the ballpark, and obviously we'll get to know the final picture only at the end of the year, but it looks like we are trending well to be able to say, okay, we have some stability in oil gross margin, and it's no longer a leaking bucket. Okay. To sum it up, therefore, gross margin lower by 12 crores, 9 crores in oil, 3 crores in foods, 12 crore flows down the PBT, but with the exception of 1 crore, the 1 crore is built up with 2 crore positive as far as the one-time credit to the P&L is concerned, and a little less than 1 crore increase in the SG&A and other SG&A expenses, I should say. Now, the 2 crore positive in the P&L is driven by the fact that we terminated our office lease in DLF Cyber City with DLF, right? And we took the opportunity because, you know, it was obviously appropriate. Our committed period in which we, you know, fixed period was lock-in period was over, and we therefore terminated our lease with DLF, and we have now renegotiated, entered fresh negotiations with them, and we have a new lease in place now. Okay? So as you know, with Ind AS, what was happening was that when you had a lease over a longer period, we had to charge into the P&L. In any period during the period of the lease, the average rental that would have accrued over the period, right? But so since we had accrued extra rental in the last few years, we took the credit of that, and that is why there is a 2 crore credit which is coming into the P&L. Overall, therefore, PBT and PAT are up 39%, down 39% and 40% versus prior year. Okay. So it's entirely a gross margin gain, and as we go forward, as I said, edible oil looks like it's trending well to prior year. Foods is down 3 crore, but we expect lower inflation in the back half. We expect to see more pricing, and we expect to continue with volume growth led margin. Okay? All right. So I'll move to page 5 of the presentation. Obviously, this is, there's been no change in this. We haven't really given new data on this relative to last time, and we'll see at the appropriate time when we get the right information. The main point I think here to note is category number 5, which is chocolate confectionery. I'd like to park you to park in your minds that actually that market is worth about 15,000 crore, and we'll come to that a little later. All right. So coming now to each of the individual categories, ready-to-cook snacks, a lower COVID-19 threat perception reflected in softening of RTC growth rate. We will continue to be watchful for it, but it does mean that we need to be able to drive other adjacencies, and we've entered 2 adjacencies. We've entered already sweet corn, and we've entered pasta. And between the 2, we find that pasta is actually a great, great category for us, and where we have right to win with a differentiated offering. So I'll come to that, and that will therefore be the focus to be able to maintain this RTC growth rate and build it up further. Pricing, we have executed pricing on premium popcorn and sweet corn to partially offset the higher commodity prices. The full impact of this pricing we'll see in the second half of FY 2022. Our differentiated pasta offering has received a very positive response. So scaling up of production is now underway. It's still a manual process, though we have ordered, meaning semi-automatic, but effectively manual. And but we also ordered more automatic lines, which are coming from outside the country too, because our expectations for pasta is pretty big for the second half, for FY23. And the product has received very well, you know. We've actually, we believe we're very positive about it, because we have a differentiated offering. And as you go to the last page, point on this page, we believe that in addition to the differentiated offering, we have tremendous retail demo capabilities, right? We have a large field organization. We have a coverage of more than 400,000 stores, and our field organization is very capable of doing demos, right? In-store demos, demonstration, and sampling. Our entire popcorn business has been built on the back of that. We have used it effectively in sweet corn also, and in microwave popcorn and instant popcorn with, you know, with pressure cookers, so on and so forth. So that's a key capability that we have, a skill set, and we've done some experimentation using the skill set on pasta, and it works beautifully. It works absolutely beautifully. In fact, the demos had such a high impact that in some of the stores that we did, the store employees used to come and say, "You know, here's 50 rupees, you know, please make some pasta for me," which is a very nice statement, nice situation to see. Or consumers came back just as we were closing it and say, "You know, please do it for me again, and I want a few packets of pasta." And the reason is simple. I think we've entered the market with a very different product, right? Everybody sells a pasta, and lots of people, you know, out of the 2,500 crore pasta market size, our estimate is almost 50% of it is commoditized, right? It is the pasta that you buy in 1 kilo or 250-gram packets, so on and so forth. The balance, you know, 1,200 crore-1,500 crore there, in that ballpark, is what sells with, you know, with basically a seasoning, right? But what we've taken it is, we've taken it to a very high level, an altogether different level, because we're giving a sauce with the pasta, right? So it is actually, if you will, positioned somewhere between buying a ready-to-cook pasta, which is sold by our competitors, right? And actually ordering pasta from a restaurant, right? It is in between that, okay? And, you know, therefore it's very, very well accepted. So we're in the process of scaling it up. It's just taking us a little time, but that part is happening. We continue to drive sweet corn, but between the two, obviously the pasta market size is much higher, and it's also, it's a much more value-added offering. The offering is much more up the value chain. So we will be putting a lot of focus on pasta, and you will hear us talking a lot about that, and not so much on sweet corn, which will continue on, you know, as it is growing. Okay. So that's on ready to cook. I'd ask you, request you please to go to the next page, which is page 7. Ready to eat snacks, we've seen a clear recovery with a lower COVID-19 threat perception. Aerated value growth reflects a stronger performance of popcorn with higher net sales realization and changes to go-to-market pay in July last year. We've done some price increases on the bigger packs, and grammage reduction is underway. This is market and category assessment. So where we see we have a big competitive threat, it could be in a market like Delhi, where we have a large number of players, or even Hyderabad or something. We will offer a different promotion in that market. And where we have lower threat perception, we might offer a higher level of promotion in these markets. Right? So we are just refining this, and it's all underway. Work underway on value-added offerings for margin improvement. Ready-to-eat snacks is a conveyor belt for us. It's a very important conveyor belt because it competes in a large market. It's like, I think, 35,000 crores, right? The ready-to-eat snacks market. And but this conveyor belt shouldn't be a drain on our resources, right? It should be profitable, or at least not be dilutive in terms of absolute margin. It's very important for our distributors, but it's important for us too. So we are working on a whole range of more premium offerings within this, within chips, within extruded, and within, if you will, our nut and seeds portfolio. And those will start to be visible. I would say we will report back to you maybe with some progress in quarter 3 or in quarter 4 of this year. And learning continues on potato chips. The business model is being developed. It's a big category, but it's a very tough category, and we want to be careful that we don't dilute our attention unnecessarily. But at the end of the day, it will be a good category for us because it will again enable our distributors and distribution system to, it will enable the conveyor belt to ride. Alright, I request you to go to page 8, which is spreads and dips. So you can see here the quarter 2 growth actually lower than the quarter 1 growth. So as we had mentioned to you, we think, we don't buy audit, but we think we lost some share. And we think we lost the share in terms of between 100 and 200 rupees price point. We were not very strong. We launched a peanut butter, the center of nut fresh peanut butter, 350 gram pack at about 115 rupees. You will start to see that in the marketplace. It's, we've been invoicing it now for more than 6 weeks, I would say, maybe 2 months. And we've also dropped the grammage on our 508 grams to 460 to 462, and we are therefore it enables us to have a presence at about 175 rupees. So this was an area of opportunity for us, and we fixed it. We've come into those price points, and therefore if you look at the monthly trends, they're happy with the progress we're making. Work is also underway on premium offerings to have a more comprehensive presence across meat packs. There is another segment which is developing, which is, you know, more expensive per kilo, probably packed in a tub, etc. And which also enables companies to meet customer expectations in terms of customer profitability. It's not the way to build a $1 billion business, but at the same time, one cannot ignore these niches. So therefore, we'll be doing work on this, and we'll report back to you probably by quarter 4. We will have some news on this. Total category value growth is ahead of volume due to higher realization of chocolate spreads and dips. And differentiated hummus offering has been well accepted, and rollout continues. One of our investors had asked us this question that, you know, you had said you'd have one more dip by now. And the answer is yes, but we wanted to focus, manufacturing to focus on the pasta offering. So we said, listen guys, you know, just focus on this one, and we'll probably come back with that launch. Because it's all offering of the same manufacturing platform. Okay. Then on breakfast cereals, you can see the growth. It's about plus 36% on a Q2 and 45% year to date. We definitely would have lost some stores in quarter one of this year. We lost some stores on breakfast cereals, and the reason was simple, that our market working came down. We asked people to stay at home, and you know, we had very limited market working, particularly during the April May months when the second wave was there. I think our people's lives were more important at that point in time. At any point in time, they would have to be more important. And we took those calls. So we did do some coverage. I think even our coverage dropped a little bit. We've been tracking about 4.4 lakhs by way of retail coverage. It would have dropped to about 4.25 lakhs, right? But we made that up in quarter two, and we are working on getting more distribution on breakfast cereals now that they are gradually coming to a full market working scenario. Our center-filled cereals are certainly entry grade. They are capable of delivering a double-digit EBITDA profile, so it's good. And we will evaluate this category for A&P support in FY23 as overall gross margin improves. The thing is that as we enter next year, we see it as a very positive space because our base for next year is going to be very high commodity prices, right? So just as last year in Q1, I was telling you that, hey, wait a minute, we need to be conscious of what is Q1 of next year going to look like. The same way, as now we're going to enter quarter one of next year, we're going to see a very high base of commodity prices, even if they don't come down. So long as we maintain our volume growth momentum and we get strong growth, we can expect to see a significant expansion in terms of absolute gross margin. And if we've seen the leaky bucket of edible oils, then all of that we can expect to flow down. So let's see how it goes. But in terms of priority, chocolates will have a higher priority. I'll come to chocolate just now. And again, I think the question had been asked, we have a couple more breakfast cereal items which are ready for launch, but we put them on hold because the first task is, to do a good job with what you have. So those products are waiting in the queue. And as and when we feel comfortable that, we're back to normal market working, we're able to drive distribution of cereals because there's a lot of work we have to do here, then we will release the other products. All right. In terms of chocolates, this has really been a very good quarter for chocolates. We completed, the product price architecture as we explained to you earlier in terms of 5 rupees, 10 rupees and, the bag snacks offerings that I guess are 20, 40 and 80 rupees and also gift pack at a higher price. But it's been very good and so far we are really focusing on the 10 rupee product. We've been doing now revenue of little under 1 crore, 90 odd lakhs every month, right? And we are actually not able to produce to market demand right now, right? All indications, frankly, are that the product can become our lead distribution SKU. The category size is large. It's a 15,000 crore category. Our offering is differentiated because there is no coconut offering in this price point. Bounty is significantly more expensive than us and is imported. We've got a great price point. We've got an offering at 10 rupees. We are not currently producing the 5 rupees because there's no capacity and therefore we are focusing on the 10 rupee SKU. And therefore, we've written focus now on maximized production, including SKU choices. And we had already taken board approval for a second line in the last board meeting in October. And yesterday we took board approval for another two lines, right? So we basically initiated quadrupling of the capacity. What does that mean? That means that basically, if we're running today at about a crore a month on this business, we think that this could be 50 odd crores next year, right? So that's why we want to build up the capacity. Obviously, exact capacity figures vary depending on, which pack size you make, so on and so forth. But at a high level, we are looking at a capacity installation of close to 50 crores. It takes a little time for these lines to come because significant parts of them are imported and they do take time to build up. Mehul, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks. Well, Shinu said I was disconnected, so okay. Thank you. So that's why we are going ahead with this. We expect to have these additional capacities in place by sometime quarter one of next year, so that we can then have a really good year and also probably be able to deploy some advertising support for the category. Albeit limited, but in our own way, we'll be able to do it effectively. So this will certainly, I think, next year become our third category to be advertised. And once we are able to do justice to this, then we'll look at breakfast cereal. But in terms of priority, this is clearly it. The other good news is we were very nervous about how we'd manage the supply chain because it does need a certain amount of refrigeration. But I think more or less we've cracked that algorithm and we are able to send transport both in refrigerated and also in non-refrigerated, depending on the temperature conditions on wood. And our product structure and portfolio actually addresses that very well. So this therefore will be one of the bets that we'll make for FY23, for which therefore, you know, we need to prepare for capacity in right now. All of our products are differentiated, so it's not that we can just go to a third party and pick up capacity. We need to build it ourselves, and that's great. And we're also going to be building a pasta to almost a similar level of about 40-50 crores. And if we can do that, then these two itself can be fairly significant chunks of growth. Obviously, nothing happens exactly to plan, right? There'll always be variations, some up, some down. But then we can look forward to a very nice food business next year. Okay. So I'll go to the next page, which is edible oil. This is page 11. You can see here, edible oils, premium oils came up to about plus 4%. Ignore the value growth because that's a function of pricing. If prices do soften, as they have softened right now, then, you know, it's the value, the relationship between value and volume can change. That is not necessarily in our control. What is in our control and should be is how the volume is doing. And reduction of mass oils is in line with overall planning. And we are on track for crystal franchising, which you'll see in the second half of FY22. As and when we'll do it, we'll make an announcement in media. Totals oils year-to-date GM of about 35 crores is trending well to the prior year of 72 crores, right? So whether it's exactly 72 or 71, it's obviously very difficult to call, but it's in the right space and, you know, doing just good. I think it's pretty fast. Normally, pricing realignments take between a year to 2 years to successfully accomplish, given also the fact that we don't advertise this category. So I was expecting a slightly longer outlook of about 18 to 24 months. It's actually happened faster, and it's a nice position to be in. It's very nice because, as I said, we are back almost to, in relative terms, we are back to FY08. When we were not advertising, but you know, we had not made the business so profitable. And I can remember a time when most of us joined the company in, I think it was FY07, in 2007. And that time, both our brands, Superlite and Hardbo, between 78 and 80 rupees. And our closest competitor, who subsequently became 30% premium to them, was 82. So we moved up, we took out all the money, now we are back to where we were. And so it should be put us in a reasonable space. All right. So I'll move on to page 12, which is comparative update as of September 24th. We haven't got data for the last week of September, so I'm qualifying this data to say that when we give you the Q3 update, then the numbers will be a little different because they'll have the full quarter two as compared to 1 week less. Okay. So if you can just turn your attention to page 13, I'll have to wind up pretty quickly in a couple of minutes. So there's some time for Q&A. So you can see we've been spending fairly consistently this year and as last year, but we have made a note that we may make some different choices in the second half. It's partly to do with IPL and ICC now being back and, you know, back to back, and also the fact that we don't get such good value for media. But it's also true with the fact we just want to see how these travel expenses pan out, you know, and how it goes. And so, I think we've done very, very good justice. Almost 18 months, we're just there plodding away. So it should be just fun. And Lay's actually came back and spent a lot of money this quarter, including on Doritos. So that was the biggest change here. If you go to page 14, you can see in spreads, in terms of competitive spend, Hindustan Unilever continued to spend on peanut butter. They spend about 40 crores on peanut butter now, which is about what we spent over the period of our life. But it shows the robustness of our model because, you know, we are able to continue to hold a strong position. And it's not so easy in the food businesses to put in money and, you know, and to get the volume expectation. So let's see how they perform. They mentioned that they are gaining momentum. Let's see how it goes. But it's still a lot of money to spend. And other than that, there's been an increase in intensity of honey. So, you know, you can see that there's a lot of spending on honey. Saffola is spending, Patanjali is spending, Dabur is spending. So, this is normal, right? Because when you compete in a commodity, chances are the only lever really that you have is advertising. So you have to keep spending more. But then it's difficult to, you know, maintain a good EBITDA profile for the category after all that kind of spending, as we walked you through some time ago. Which is why our model, we believe, is better, and you know, it gives results. Breakfast cereals, page 15 out of 21, you can see here that actually the spending has come down this quarter. We think that possibly some of the players, you saw have actually invested more in the other category. So it's possible that the one reason for the lower spending in this category could be that they are spending money on other categories for the quarter. Chocolates, Mondelez continues to have a huge presence. If you look at the spending of 217 crores for the quarter, Mondelez spent about 80% of that. Right? So it's really a powerful position. You know, way ahead. I mean, if one company is spending 80%, it means really that everybody else doesn't really have a share of voice, right? And that's okay. It's we think it's not an issue for us because we have a differentiated offering. We've gone in with a coconut offering, which Mondelez definitely doesn't have, and globally, right? And therefore, we are in a very, very strong position. And that's why we believe we're getting the traction, right, and being able to build up this business quickly. In terms of edible oils, that's page 17 of the presentation. You can see we're not spending any money. Saffola spent a little less money as compared to the last quarter. They've also been investing in other categories. And Fortune really became the largest spender. They spent almost twice of either Saffola or Emami, approximately, give or take a bit. So that's I think, consistent, which is that in the oils category, premium edible oils are likely to see a smaller and smaller share of voice, and therefore in the future, a smaller and smaller share of market. Which was our hypothesis, has been our hypothesis from the beginning. And the larger players who are willing to operate at lower EBITDA margins are obviously going to have a larger share of voice. If you go to page 18, this is more just academic at this point in time. But, you know, we will be launching Noodles, so we'd like to keep track of it. And the Noodles spending is also down, significantly down, lower than quarter one. You can see Nestle, actually Maggie had a much lower spending. They put a lot more money past, if you look at the next slide. And both Sunfeast and Saffola are spending money, albeit at lower levels than probably what they were doing in the last quarter, or not, certainly not more. If you go to the next slide, which is page 19, which is pasta, you can see Maggie spent a lot of money in pasta, about 8.5 crores. It's quite a change versus earlier. I'm not sure what are the dynamics of it, but certainly in quarter one, they had not spent that kind of money. Last year, I think the spending has been there in the category. Okay, and then last on soups, which we intend to enter at a future point in time. Knorr definitely remains the dominant spender here and has been even in the past. Okay, so summary and way forward, we are maintaining a strong growth in foods. We are maintaining and will continue to maintain a strong growth in foods without being derailed by commodity headwinds. That's clearly the priority for us. We shouldn't get derailed by commodity headwinds and make wrong choices either in terms of pricing or advertising cutting or anything like that. We need to be able to deliver, keep delivering strong growth, because that really sets us up very well for the future. And, you know, for us to be a billion-dollar company, we need to sustain these growth rates of about 20-odd%. So we'll see, and, you know, we'll take actions and, you know, modify as we go along. Second half expectation of reduced impact of commodity costs. We've already talked about it. Increased pricing and volume-driven margin improvement. Edible oils seem to be trending well to prior year, confirming therefore that the price reductions that we took in FY21 are reaching a point of gross margin stability. I can't say it is stable. We will not be able to say that until we end the year and it's stable, but it's kind of reaching in that ballpark. Right? So that leaking bucket, at least the hole is not that big as it used to be. And media spends have been maintained in the first half. We may have to take different decisions in the second half because travel has cost us coming back. A lot of money that we deployed last year and the price reduction that we did was because travel was very low and we really squeezed it. But now travel is there and we need to be in the market because we will not be able to drive our new categories like breakfast cereals, chocolate spreads, be attacking on peanut butter, all of those, right? Unless we are in the market almost now back to normal. So that has a cost attached to it. So we just see how to do it. And we believe we are on track to deliver foods growth in a profitable manner in FY22. So that's it. I think I've walked you through almost the entire P&L already. We'll be ready for questions now. Mehul, so Rujita, over to you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Shivank Agarwal from Perfect Research. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. I have a few questions. I will list all of them at once. Question one. We know that you don't buy Nielsen data and only share annual numbers. But could you please share some qualitative insights for distribution region number of stores for the branded food business? Question two. Food growth YoY has been slowed down. We understand that last year was high base effect due to COVID-related demand. Can we see us moving back to 20% plus branded food growth rate in coming times? Question three. Can you share some color on steps taken to arrest loss of market share in peanut butter and our right to win given so many brands rushing in this space?
Okay, thank you, Shiva. So I'll answer your question. On Nielsen data, yes, as you said, we don't take Nielsen data, but like, if you recall, I gave some numbers just now. So yeah, I will just recap them for you. Our retail coverage, as per our internal calculations, is about 4.4 lakhs, right? So that's a little under 500,000 stores. And we tend to grow this fairly regularly and every year. Our widest distributed brand as per our internal sales, right? So that excludes any wholesale, any distribution to wholesale, which for sure will be there, is IP Instant Popcorn, which is about 2.7 lakh stores, right? So a little under 3 lakh stores. Our chocolates today would be distributed in about 55,000 stores, and our breakfast cereals would be distributed in about little under 70,000, 67,000 stores. So when we say that we think Duo can be the lead item for distribution, because, you know, it really doesn't need demonstration, it doesn't need sampling, it sells on its own, right? You place the display ready shipper, and it's very little space for the retailer, he or she is happy to take it. So we think that Duo has the potential actually to be able to cross our instant popcorn distribution and grow it, and after that become the lead distribution driver for the company, right? Obviously, we are not going to invest a couple of 100 crores on capacity immediately, so we will just take it bit by bit, which is why, you know, we are quadrupling capacity right now. Then we will assess after that, and then if need be, or we still, you know, we see yes, we may accelerate it. We may accelerate it and make further investments also. In terms of food growth, I think the base, see, as we mentioned last year also, certainly our base of last year was a little inflated because of COVID. And certainly in-home consumption would have had some impact as people return to normalcy, right? So, you know, if you go into the market, the markets are crowded, the roads are traffic jams, right? It's only really white collar jobs who are still working from home, right? So some, and of course the impact of schools, because, you know, in many cases schools have not opened or have opened partially. So we see some impact of that, and we were certainly cognizant of that. If you remember when we started there, we said we have very muted expectations of ready to cook because we already have a large base. Of course, we invested in that base last year. We increased media spend, knowing that if we didn't do it, we could actually have a decline situation. I think we've come out pretty well out of it. But we have to be cautious in terms of what we expect from ready-to-cook popcorn. And that is why we are focusing right now on the adjacencies, on sweet corn pasta, and particularly on pasta. So it's only a function of scaling up. I think we have a great offering. And if we are able to scale that up, that could help us to be able to maintain the ready-to-cook momentum. Okay? Right? So that, you know, as a category, it continues to grow at a robust rate. So that's our answer on ready-to-cook. In terms of peanut butter, I think we talked about it. We've made significant changes in our portfolio between 100 and 200 rupees. We have two new offerings at 120 and 175. We have continued to invest behind the category, so that's very important. We may not be spending as much as Levers, but we are still the dominant peanut butter brand. There's no question about that. And that part is done. And as I mentioned, we will look at how to handle the premium end. Okay, so
thank you,
Shahan. Thank you for asking the question. Rajita, over to you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Akshay Cheda from Perfect Research. Please go ahead. Mr. Akshay Cheda, please go ahead with a question.
Ma'am, we are short on time. Maybe you want to go to the next person. So that's,
we'll go to the next question, which is from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good afternoon. My questions all at once. Firstly, if you can...
I'm so sorry, Mr. Panthaki, but we cannot hear you clearly. Can you speak a bit louder, sir?
Am I audible now?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah. So if you can just give some idea on the digital and e-commerce part as far as foods is concerned. So firstly, what percentage of your foods ad spends are via digital? And secondly, what percentage of the foods top line comes out of e-commerce websites? Second question is, this capex in chocolates to quadruple the capacity, how much capex will be required to do that? And thirdly, the peanut butter market share loss that has happened, you mentioned it's happened in a particular price point, but would you be able to give some idea as to which brand you have lost the market share to? That's all.
So peanut butter market share of digital and e-commerce, right? These are the three things. Okay.
And capex in chocolates.
Sorry, and capex on chocolates. I apologize. It's my fault, Percy. Thank you so much. Yeah. Okay. So, So let me come to that. So, on digital and e-commerce, the amount that we spent, Percy, is relatively low at this point in time. You would have noticed that, you know, we've just initiated our handle, the Sunrock Food handle, and we'll also be working together to add to. The spends on the, on social media, if you will, are limited. Of course, we do invest in banner ads, so on and so forth, when it comes to, let's say, folks like, you know, the e-commerce websites, right? That spending is there, but I would say it's still, the total will be low single digit, mid 4 to 5%, probably not more than that, right? Over time that will go up, but for now that's where it is. And we believe television is the right medium for us because we still have a big job to do in terms of, you know, expanding distribution. As we, I talked about doing premium offerings in terms of, you know, in peanut butter. As we do those will probably have a disproportionate share of only digital. Okay, right. So there we will need to behave like a small entrepreneur with the limited resources who's not focusing on broad scale distribution, and there we'll be spending a little more on digital. In terms of the e-commerce share of our food business, it's about 7%, right? So it's very much part of the course. We are no different. In fact, even our parent company is in the range of 7 to 8%. And for us also, that we feel it is right. It shouldn't be too high, it shouldn't be too low. We also need to ensure going forward that our traditional trade, the distributor business, the HFS business continues to grow rapidly, right? Because that at the end of the day is the moat that we've created, right? The biggest moat in the FMCG business that you have is the power of distribution, right? Today we are running under 500,000 stores. There aren't too many companies who are at the 500,000 mark level. There aren't too many, right? And that's a huge competitive advantage. So one of our investors once asked us, they said, you know, so, you know, there's so many private equity firms who are competing in the market. And so do you see that as a threat, you know, investing in smaller companies? And we said no, because they will be irritants for us, but they will not be a threat because they will always struggle to get up. So once, if you want a distribution of 500,000 stores, you've got to seriously invest behind a retail coverage model, right? So we are quite comfortable with this 6-7% contribution that we have to the food business. Okay, last was on peanut butter. I would say it's a mix. We don't buy Nielsen data, but we doubt very much that say Kisan, which is obviously spent a lot of money, it's there visible at 40 crores, would have gained more than a single digit share of the market after all, despite all the spending, right? So they will be there. Then there will be some other guys, right? Who are competing. There's a lot of manufacturers of peanut butter, so it's quite fragmented, I would say. Okay? So that's why we feel confident that the steps that we are taking are delivering us, and we can see that in the monthly figures. They're giving us the results that we look forward to getting. Okay? Does that answer your question, Percy?
Thank you.
Okay.
The next question is from the line of Shirish Pardesi from Centrum Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a few fundamental questions. I think we spoke in terms of connecting many manufacturing units and reducing the distance to the market.
Ma'am, can you hear Shirish? I can't hear. The line is very bad.
Yeah. So I said last year. Am I audible now?
Little better, Shirish. Just come as close to the phone as you can, huh? Think about it. Thank you.
So, So what I was asking that last year you guided that we will be trying to bring in more capacities and trying to cut the distance between the distributor and the companies. We've also said that we will look at the geographical expansion and we will exploit the neighboring countries. But I think given the COVID wave which is now behind, is those plans are still now burning or it is still at the back end? That's first question. Second question is that though I think what I wanted to understand, what kind of manufacturing we do in-house and what is the outsource? And why we still have the hesitation not to do the outsourcing and manufacturing and focus on the marketing and distribution? And the third angle is that the cost synergies, what you have been guiding, saying that the inflation is one part, but we have also done benefit analysis why we are manufacturing. So is that the right way to look at it going forward for the new categories which you are planning to enter?
Okay. Thank you, Shirish. So I'll come, and I think on the capacity, I missed out one part that Percy had asked about process capacity. So the answer is, Shirish, we continue to work on capacity expansion, but in a steady and moderated manner. As you know, we don't do huge capexes in 1 year and then nothing the next year, right? So right now, for example, we'll be investing, we talked about it, we said we'll probably be doing about 30 odd crores in the current year. And a fairly significant part of that has gone into and will be going into chocolate, right? So that, to be able to produce that revenue that we need about 50 crores. On an average, we get about, or we would like to get about 2 turns, right, on our investment. And that's kind of a, if you ever want to check, how much is this guy really spending on this, if you look at the revenue and divide it by about 2, you'll probably get an idea of, what kind of spending. In terms of geographic expansion, yes, I think between Bangladesh and Sri Lanka, certainly Bangladesh is a much larger market and also is economically doing a lot better, I think, than Sri Lanka. So we've also set up a plant there. We are in the process of expanding that business. Obviously, Bangladesh, had a longer COVID lockdown closure. They started opening, in fact, only in early October this time, right? And so as they open up, we'll be working on expanding our business there as well, right? Sri Lanka, I think, will be a lower priority than Bangladesh. You must have read in the newspaper that they've actually sought, almost $500 million lease facility from the Indian government for purchase of petroleum, right? So I think it's going to be a tough haul as far as Sri Lankan business is concerned. But Bangladesh continues to be very robust. It's an extremely, it's a very good country to operate in, right? So we said, but we will take it steady. We are not going to lose a lot of money, and then we need to focus on India, but at the same time we need to keep building Bangladesh. All right. In terms of manufacturing in-house and outsourcing, I think our position remains. We want to sell products that we make, because otherwise how will we have a differentiated offering? If I go to somebody and say, you make this for me, it could be a pasta or a noodle or something like that, and I sell that, what is the comparative advantage that I have? Zero. If I can ask him to make it, somebody else can ask him to make it too. Tomorrow the customer can ask him to make it too, and it will be a private label business, right? So we will gain competitive advantage, pricing power, and the right to win only if we have differentiated products. So here's our take on pasta and noodles, okay? We are not selling just pasta, and we are not selling just noodles, right? But we are happy to buy pasta and we are happy to buy noodles, then stick it together with our sauces and sell a meal kit to the consumer or a snack kit to the consumer. We got no problem with that, right? But if we just buy items just for the sake of increasing turnover, that is not a high quality snack food business. We want to build a high quality snack food business, right? Something where even if there is inflation, even if there is competitive attack, the moat is so strong, it's very difficult for somebody to breach that. So, Shirish, to your point, if I go to somebody and say, oh, by the way, now make pasta for me and let me sell it, right? And I put Sundrop pasta or Sundrop noodle made by Shirish Padeshi and company, right? I don't see any advantage of that. I may get some turnover in the near term because I put 20, 30 crores, but it will be an EBITDA negative business. You can take that in writing from me and happy to discuss it whenever we meet face to face. I'll show you the example. You don't need to ask me. You can look at our presentation, look at the competitive spend, and tell me where is the proof. The proof of the pudding is in the eating. That's a it doesn't even take off. It doesn't fly, right? You may inflate revenue temporarily, but it's not a profitable business, okay? And it will come to a halt one day when the base business is unable to sustain this business that is, you know, being supported by heavy investments in media, all right? Now, but we are happy, as I said, to buy the pasta from outside and to combine it with our sauce. Because now we are making something or selling something that only we can make or only we are doing today. So we are doing that. So to your question, we don't make the pasta in-house, we buy the pasta out. It's outsourced. Similarly, in Pad Thai noodles, we don't make the noodles in-house, we buy the noodles from outside. We are happy to do that, right? But it has to be combined with something where we hold the ace. We have competitive advantage, okay? Hmm? And last is cost benefits. Of course, there are obvious cost benefits of, you know, as we scale up and we are running at relatively low levels of capacity utilization, right? So those pieces are there, and you do get operating leverage. We saw that last year. We picked up a couple of 100 basis points, right? So, but we've also added new plants along the way, and but of course there are no new plants being added right now. But last year we added two new plants, and we saw that in the period when we added the plants, our manufacturing cost as a percentage of sales rose, and then it dropped by about 200 basis points after that, right? But overall, gross margin is a function of multiple factors. It's a function of what is the gross contribution of the items that you are adding, what is the source of growth, what is the manufacturing profile of the different categories. So, and the, but there is, on over and above, 100% there is operating leverage. Okay? All right. Thank you, Shirish. So, Mehul, I guess we have time for one last question. Yeah? Yujita?
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Donal Desai from Total Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sachin. Good afternoon. So, Sachin, three questions. First is slightly strategic one. So, what happened, what is currently happening on the peanut butter side? Taking that as an example, just wanted to get your views. So, for a category that we create, which can become really big, and while we are feeding the entire category and putting a lot of hard work, and the new guys come in with and spend a lot of A&P and then, you know, try to take away market share. That has happened probably in peanut butter and can happen in future for other categories also that we want to create. So how do you guys think about it and how do you handle that situation? Any thoughts around that?
Okay. And the second and the third?
The second question is, you mentioned about, our year-to-date gross margin of food business of 35 crore. But I was looking at the Q1 numbers, the gross margin in Q1 in oil business was 20 crore. So Q2 essentially is 15 crore. So on run rate basis, we are actually lower than 72 crore number. How do you see the trajectory and why do you think we will be at least able to match the margins in terms of absolute numbers for FY21? And third question is the gross margin on the food side. Now, the entire, thesis around which we are working is that, edible oil is a business where, it's very difficult to, pass on price. We don't have any pricing power. There are no entry barriers. Now, in food business, we are in a situation where we have a reasonably diversified product basket. So, going forward, when such kind of commodity inflation happens, do you think it is possible to pass on this kind of price changes even with 3-6 months lag, or it's always that we have to take some hit, and we can't pass on everything to the end consumer?
Okay, thank you. They're all very good questions, so I'll try and answer them and before we close the meeting, so we'll take the permission of everybody to take a few more minutes. So yeah, so I think on the peanut butter example, it's a good example, right? Although we entered after that time it was Fun Foods, which Dr. Oetker said that, but yeah, the category creation job has entirely been done by us. And our assessment and data point is that we have been able to hold in our market share, and that's what the data also shows, in the region of about 30-35% is our market share, right? So we we see this category, we see new entrants coming into this category, we don't think that the answer to this is just spending money. Huh? So just spending money, in our view, is not the answer, right? In fact, we also tried it one year, many years ago, on instant popcorn. We spent a real large amount of money, it doesn't pay off, right? Because the consumer buys foods or food products for the taste, okay? So peanut butter is an example of a category where there are two sub-segments emerging within that category. One is people who buy for taste, and the second who buy for protein, right? The person who buys for protein is not so fussed about taste, okay? And the person who buys for taste will only buy for taste, right? So what we have actually done effectively is our offerings are also catering to this, right? We will continue to drive recipe and taste, which is our base Sunrock peanut butter. The offering that we have at 115 rupees is a nut fest peanut butter, which has actually different ingredients and still has the same promise of protein, okay? So if you will, as the category grows and there are fewer barriers to entry because obviously peanut butter, peanuts are made in India, and there are a number of peanut butter manufacturers available in Gujarat today, we will sub-segment the category. We'll keep promoting and driving our recipe, but we will also play in the mass market in the protein game because we need that scale, right? So we will have to play this game of multiple categories. It's not a new game, right? For example, even in edible oils, we have premium oils and we have mass oils, right? So we have played because but only difference is in edible oils, we don't own the plants ourselves, right? So we don't have that capital. But in categories like peanut butter or others, we have our own plants, and we therefore need to have a presence in both. We don't see this necessarily as a threat in every category that we build because that was the driving force behind your question, right? So let me take an example of chocolates, right? Now, we have got a coconut center-filled chocolate, right? Our cost structure is so efficient, and the price at which we sell, and we still make a good gross contribution on it, right? We find it very difficult to conceive of either threat actually hurting us in this, either somebody coming and spending a lot of money, right? Because they don't have the cost structure that we have, right, to be able to attack those price points, or somebody else new, right? So as we go forward, you can expect that, and as we use the network effect of different products, you can expect that our entries will be more and more difficult for people to replicate. That's what it boils down to, okay? But can we guarantee that it won't absolutely not happen? I think the answer is no. We can't guarantee that. And in those circumstances, we'll just have to play the game kind of what we are doing on peanut butter, okay? Yes, sir. Second is on your question on year-to-date oils gross margin. Yes, you're absolutely correct. So I would urge you also to look back on last year's gross margin. So last year we did, you correctly said that you said, "Look, Sachin, you've done 35 crores, but my math is that you did 15 crores in quarter two." And that's absolutely correct, right? But now you have to compare the 15 crores of quarter two with the last two quarters of last year, right? That becomes a critical comparison point. How have we exited quarter two in terms of last year? Now, last year, if you go back to our recording, we did 72 crores in the full year and 43 crores in the first half of the year, okay? That means in the second half of the year, we did 29 crores, all right? If you divide 29 by 2, you get a figure of 14.5 crores, all right? So you have to look at the 15 crores both in the context of the 20 crores of quarter one and in the context of what happened in the second half of last year, right? And obviously, I don't have a crystal ball, and I can't tell you that, "Oh, by the way, 14.5 and 15, it's a no-brainer. It's going to happen immediately." Nobody can answer that immediately. But I think we are tracking well, right? And therefore, I would say I think we are tracking well to being in that range of about 70 crores, okay? Did that help to answer your questions, I hope? Anyway, we are out of time now, so I just hope and pray that it did, okay? All right. Okay, Dan, I think with that, we can close the meeting. So I'd just like to say thank you all for taking out the time to be with us today. I hope that we were able to address your queries. and take care, have a great day, and a very happy Diwali to all of you and your families, right? Stay safe. Please don't let your guard down. A lot of people in North India let their guard down during March and at the time of Holi, and I think that was a big spreader. So please do stay safe, and let's get through this year together. Cheers. Have a great one. Cheers. Bye now.
Thank you. On behalf of Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.